everybody down, they didn't get that much credit because we let Waters take the front. And today, well, ever since then, every time I go out somewhere and we talk about polymers, I say, well, you know about GPC? Oh, yeah. I said, do you know who invented it? Well, no. So we have got not proper credit, nor did John Moore get proper credit for inventing it, probably. Wasn't long ago, a couple of guys from Bell Labs called Ray Bowyer, here just like a month ago, saying, where is John Moore? We don't think he got enough credit, he got any awards at all or anything for inventing this. And they'd been looking in the chromatography award and seeing any news, and here got this and that. So Ray called me and got me in contact with him, and I said, absolutely, I think he never got credit, nor did Dow get credit for this. And John Moore now is retired and living in Florida, still alive. Anyway, I think that's probably the greatest invention we ever came up with, the GPC. And the reason it came is because if you want to invent something, John, is to have a real need and demand that it be filled. Boy, I've got more inventions, particularly in instruments, because there's a real need and you tell your people you've got to have an answer and know exactly what they're shooting for. And somewhere you got a bunch of smart people, you'll get the answer. For instance, we urethanes, we were doing a lot of work in foam, rigid foam for insulation, you know, like polystyrene. All this is urethanes. And all the work on this had been done in Midland on polystyrene. Well, I got to working on it in Texas on polyurethane. And the big thing is to measure the K factor, you know, the insulation quality. And you know, the instrument we had been developed, I guess, in Midland or somewhere, took 24 hours to get a K factor on a piece of foam. And when I ran into that, I said, that's absolutely asinine. We got to beat that. I told my guys, I want a machine that I can take a piece of foam and I stick it in a slot and it'll read off what the K factor is, just like that. I want that kind of machine now. So they went to work, and they almost invented it. They came up with a machine that'll read it off in 10 minutes. And that, soon it's still the standard today. But boy, we invent more instruments in Dow because of need and know what have to have. A guy who's trying to invent an instrument sitting out here, an instrument company in a, you know, just an open room, he's got a problem. But where you've got a need, boy, I tell you, it really comes.
You also did some work on rocket propellants.
Yeah, the reason we did that, we got in a few government contracts, but we had a fella, a guy who worked for me kind of directly, named Wallace McMichaels, who came from the government. Well, see, now he worked for who did he work for? What company? Not Thiokol. Oh, can't tell you. He worked for, I won't say Phillips, but, and he was in this arsenal up at McGregor, Texas, working on propellants for this company. Very interested in, he came to work for Dow, and so he kind of plugged in the idea of some of the using, well, you know, like PO polymer, it's got a lot of oxygen in it, it burns easy, and it make an excellent binder for a rocket. So we did a lot of work on that. We just didn't know enough about it. Or frankly, the company didn't show any interest. You know, we develop things and we have no way. If you don't have a way of moving on a project, sometimes they just die. I'm not so sure we couldn't have done a lot more good, but we, there's just a lot of other things with higher priority in the company than this. But we did do quite a bit, mainly through the interest of him and his knowledge that we did this at all. And we never did get too far with it. I kind of regret that sometimes. A lot of things we could have led up on and done better, but gee, you know, there's just so many things coming at you. And like they throw the whole polyethylene research on you, you've got to deliver, you know, and a lot of other stuff matter. And so some of these newer things sometimes kind of get put by the wayside. But I'm sure if somebody took out to find real good uses for polypropylene oxide, they'd find them. But we just didn't have a way of getting to that, seemed like.
I want to come back to that point. I have something I wanted to ask you about a little later. But at this point, I have some names of people you were associated with in Texas, and you've already discussed a few of them, but let me mention them and see if you have any other comments you wanted to make. And Earl Barnes especially, because you worked closely with him for a long period of time.
Earl Barnes, see, I transferred, you know, Dr. Wright to his group, and I have essentially worked with Earl the rest of my career. I've worked with other temporary other report to other people, but Earl and I have been side by side for ever since. And we're two of the best friends there are and trust each other implicitly. Earl Barnes probably, in my opinion, the best executive director I ever had, ever will have. He's unbelievable. He's truly interested in technology. Very creative. People's skills are unbelievable. Motivating power to get people to do things new. Well, I guess the most fortunate thing ever happened to me in Dow is the fact that I worked with Earl Barnes. Because he trusted me. He believed in anything I wanted to do. He was behind me. That's the reason I went off and did a lot of screwy thing. Some of them worked, some of them didn't, because so many other bosses would have said, cut out that nonsense and get on with his everyday life, you know. And Earl and I talk even now. In fact, I was talking to him yesterday. He called me from Wyoming. Yeah, unbelievable. Excellent scientist and excellent manager of people.
What about Walter Rausch?
Walt Rausch was the major manager of manufacturing in Texas, and in which Earl, for the longest, worked. His research group worked under. We were the organic section of the Texas division. Fine man, hard boy. He wanted you to do right, and he expected you to do right. But first top notch guy. I like him. He eventually became the technology center for all manufacturing for Dow, and been retired a good bit. But he held a good, hard, steady line. Everybody called him Papa Rausch.
Yes, sir. Is it Butel?
A.P. Bartle?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, A.P. Bartle. Well, they just get more. A.P. Bartle, you know, went down and ran the Texas division. And unbelievable man. You know, probably, hadn't been for Dr. Bartle, he put, of course, the first plant down there with him because that was a place to put magnesium production. But then he went into the petrochemical business down there. That was the place to do it in the South. Hadn't been for his ability to fight and get his way with the board, they'd have put a lot of that stuff up here. If they had, there'd never been the Dow Chemical Company. They probably went under. But he put all that stuff in Texas. And he set the tone for the Texas Division people, you know, their aggressiveness, their risk-taking, their ability to fight, do everything you're big enough to do. Did that all his life. Even when he became in his middle 70s, still working, our director of search of Texas Division, he never failed. He lived up here running their government affairs then. Come into Texas, he never failed to give me a call. Come over and tell me what's new. He's always thinking about the future. See, that's what I call in Dow or in the chemical industry, really, the end of the age of the patriarchs. You see, we had people, very creative people like Herbert Dow, start these companies, a lot of them around. The Fords and Willard Dow, Herbert Dow and so forth. Then as he faded out, he developed a bunch of strong men under him, guys like Strohsacker here in Dow, Boydell, a whole bunch of people who ran the company. They ran their section of the company like a king, you know, more or less, and they were risk takers, they were pioneers, they were tough. And a bunch of the business people didn't dominate them. They did what they told them to do. The business people wasn't running the company. They were running the company. And, of course, these patriarchs have all died out now. And now we swung around to the normal where the young 90-day wonder business people, I don't mean that derogatory, I mean it, have taken over. And they're running the companies. Now, Dow has held out longer on this than most companies. Now, they're being swung that way pretty strong now. Most other companies have gone that way, Carbide and Dow, DuPont. But anyway, there's, you know, there's phases that things seem to go through. And Dow has been very fortunate. See, we've been dominated because of that background. Dow Chemical has been dominated primarily by research and production. They hold the power, have had in the company. And that means we've had strong manufacturing and strong research and strong new development of products. When you swing around the other way, that slowly looks like Carbide. Carbide has gone from one of the toughest research competitors we ever had in the 50s and 60s. To almost a has-been. Because they decimated the R&D and their manufacturing technology. That's the reason they're in all this trouble they're in. And I hope Dow don't go that away. And that's the reason I was talking to this new director yesterday, which he says he's not going to let it happen. Which I think maybe he might just can do it. Anyway, that's...
Did you know E.C. Britton?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You well.
Did he come down to Texas?
Oh, yeah. In fact, he's my best, one of my best buddies. I worked very closely at his laboratory. I knew him well. And when they were building a new research center over in Freeport, you know, we had this old group of buildings and stuff over in Plant A, but we're going to build this new research center now over in Plant B, away from the plant a little bit, the Gulf a little bit. But they weren't, because of, I don't remember all the factors now, they were just going to put part of us over there. And I didn't have a laboratory over there. Doc Breton came down one day visiting, looking around and looking at the plans for the new research. He says, "Where's Mac Pruitt's laboratory? He's not over here." Next day, I was called up, get in here and plan your laboratory. So he, my buddy, I got me a brand new laboratory out of it. Doc was quite a guy, quite a guy. He's a storyteller, inventive, had a million ideas. He's, don't have them. We don't have them like that anymore.
The last name I have here is Shigley.
Yeah, Shigley. Shigley was over in the inorganic side of the Texas Division. His whole group was called Inorganic Group, which backed up the, you know, the magnesium and all everything we had in the way of inorganics. And he ran the that for years. Actually, he was one time the manager of Dow Magnesium Corporation. He was the plant manager for a while there. Then he moved back over to the research. And then he moved back up here and became involved in when Dr. Bartle moved. He was a good friend of Dr. Bartle's. And when he moved up here, he became involved in government affairs. Very nice gentleman. Quite talented. But he and Earl were kind of in competition with each other for Dr. Bartle, because Earl ran all the organic and Shigley ran the inorganic. See, Earl never became full director of research, and then when Earl became general manager of the Texas Division and then moved to Midland, Shigley moved. Well, then Levi became the director of search. First time we ever had a director of search of all the research in Texas. And then I followed Leathers and was director of search of all the research.
That was in 65, I believe.
67.
67.
Became director of search of Texas Division.
What was the relationship at that time between Dow Texas and Midland? Was that the time that period, 65 to 71, before you moved to Midland?
That's good. In the where the Texas Division did their best research, probably, well, I won't say that completely, we did a lot of good research in the 60s, particularly in new products, urethanes, epoxies, derricane, all kind of copolymers of ethylene. You can just name them. I can just name them dozens of them. Dozens of them. The Michigan Division had kind of gotten, they had had this central research go off, and they'd become kind of high tone. You remember the time when the research all of a sudden in the industry felt like they was kind of academic and they're getting high toned? And they felt like they were a little too good to work with the business TSD groups. They were going to go off and do their thing. And the Michigan Division research had been clobbered to where they didn't. So this area was pretty bleak in results in the 60s. Texas was at its peak. And I was a new product man. Levi and McClure were the more processed people. I worked very closely. In fact, I was on the two first business, we started the business team concept. I was on the two first business teams they had up here. We worked very closely with the business people in the tech service. And that's the reason we were able to develop so well, because we were just hand in glove, and there wasn't anybody in up top management bothering either of us. We just did our things. We did something we didn't, we got onto something wasn't any good, we just buried it and didn't tell anybody. And that's the ideal way to do products. If you carry, and this is what I'm afraid now, if you carry all the decisions about new products too high in the company, you've got troubles, because they can't afford to fail, the top management. Mm-hmm. Guys like me down in the trenches down there in the labs, we could fail all day long and go as long as we could bear them, and nobody knew how to get in there and figure out what we were doing. As long as we were successful enough to, on most of the things, and that's, we worked hand in glove with the product department. We didn't blame anybody. We protected each other. And man, we developed the products. And we had people like old John Donalds and that kind of folks helping us, you know. So we came up with all kind of things in the 60s. So the relationship between Texas and the business and the TS&D was excellent. I would say the relationship between the Central Research and Texas was good, but not still a little jealousy, you know, between the two groups. This is one reason why I couldn't get GPC accepted. Some of that, but yeah, it wasn't bad at all. It was good.
Is this when you started the work in the polycarbonate resins? Is that?
Well, I started work on polycarbonates. See, we had gotten bisphenol A, and all the raw materials for polycarbonates. In about 65, I decided, well, now Dow ought to be in the polycarbonates now, somewhere, somehow. And it was tough because Bayer had all the patents and GE was there, both good. So I went to work trying to buy the technology from Bayer. I made a trip to Germany, went to their plastics people. They said, you're crazy. The market's not going to grow, and you don't need to be in there. We're not going to sell you anything. Well, okay. Came home, and one time the president of Bayer was in Freeport visiting Dr. Bartle. So I got Earl. I said, Earl, here's the time. Let's sell this guy on licensing us the technology. But we talked to him, and he said, fine. Sounds like a good deal to me. Boy, I said, gee, we got it made. But boy, when we went home and went back to the same people I'd went to, no soap. So if we're going to get into polycarbonate business, we'd have to develop our own technology and get around all the patents. So we slowly went to work in the lab, just one or two people playing around, finding out, doing this, doing that. No backing from anybody. We didn't want any backing. And we began to learn things and do things and find out things. And slowly, slowly, yeah. It's just one of those, we've developed our all technology 100% within Dow.
It was in 71 that you then moved on to Midland.
Yeah.
How did that move come about?
Working. Julius Johnson was director of research. He had taken Ray Boundy's place. But they wanted Julius to move out of that job and take over the worldwide pharmaceutical business. And by that time, Earl Barnes was president of the Dow USA. You know, we got Dow USA, Dow Europe areas. So Earl wanted me to come take Julius's place. I'm not so sure that some of the board members, they probably wanted somebody up here, I'm sure. I don't know all the conversation, but Earl had really the choice because he was president. So he called me and said, I'd like for you to come up here. Well, one thing I'd said, I'll never move to Midland, Michigan. That's the last place I'll go. But I'd been coming up here twice a month for years to all these business teams, you know, and that's a burden. You know what, traveling. You've just been through it. Traveling up here is worse than living here, frankly. But anyway, I didn't like the idea of leaving my home. But Earl said, well, how about coming up? We're not sure what we want to do. How about coming up temporarily for about 6 months? Well, I couldn't say no to that, but I knew what he was doing to me. So he said, I'll rent your house, furnish it, place for you to live and everything that 6 month period. So I move up here in this thing they've got fixed up for me. I moved up here in June, I believe, like May or June. But I knew I was hooked when I moved. But at least you rationalize, well, maybe I'll get to go back. But frankly, I began to like it immediately. I tell you, the challenge of the job and everything and what was going on, and I knew that if I didn't take it, somebody else would, and they might not do as good as I thought I could do. So I September, of course, became permanent and took the job. But anyway, Earl snuck up on me, got me up here. But see, I was 57 then, see, when I moved up here. And that's another thing I thought about. You know, why would they want to fix it? Today, they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't think about that.
Really?
No. But I think it's wise to take people who've been there. Like, see, I knew this company like a book. And probably knew research about as good or better than anybody in the company. Earl knew that. And but today they'd go pick up somebody didn't know enough from nothing about. You know, the theory today is, you know, a good man can do anything anywhere you put him, and the younger the better. And this is good and bad, but if a guy hadn't earned his spurs, it demoralizes a lot of people. And you don't want to make too many moves where you put people who haven't earned their spurs. Well, I'd earned mine. I'd been there a long time, done a lot of good, done my lot of products, been involved, everything up here for years, you know, business people and all. And so I wasn't any stranger hardly to anybody.
Recently, I think maybe I'm going to